I'm Ashley Webster, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, October 26th, 2018, and Lisa Brady. One idea to stop a migrant caravan heading to the U.S.? Send in the military, but probably not in the way you might think.
We are not talking about infantry or combat troops being sent to the border. That would be illegal.
I'm Chris Foster. The Indiana Senate race is at least a little about President Trump.
It's definitely about the president, but it's different because you've got one guy saying I'm going to vote with the president all of the time and another guy saying that I voted with the president 62% of the time.
And I'm Chris Wallace. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
By early next week, one week before the midterm elections, hundreds more U.S. troops could be stationed at the border with Mexico. Active duty, but not combat troops. There to play a supporting role as a mass migration that started in Central America continues a long journey northward, gaining thousands more on the trek.
I feel very bad. All my body is hurting. I can't stand it.
Some seeking medical attention at stops along the way for heat stroke, dehydration, and blistered feet. Fox's William Lajeunesse has been following their journey now in southern Mexico.
The caravan leaves around 5 in the morning. Some will hitchhike. Some will pay about $1.50 to try to catch a taxi, if you will, and many others, of course, will walk. Then they'll come to the town square.
They rest, buy food from local vendors, and hang tarps to get a break from the sun and lay clothes out to dry. Some do plan to split from the main group.
Some are going to take a train. They'll probably go east towards Mexico and McAllen, Texas. That's about 1,000 miles away. And then you've got Tijuana, that's about 2,300 miles away. And they'll hopscotch from town to town to town the entire way. Now, most that we talk to have no idea what to expect when they arrive. But we did talk to three guys this morning who were deported from the U.S. Their plan is to play the odds and sneak in.
My boss in California, he speak with me and say, Giovanni, when you come back, I need it in my company. And I say, maybe 30 or 35 days, maybe.
President Trump has raised questions about what motivated such a large group all at once and the timing so close to the midterms. And he's been adamant that they won't be allowed in. But would it be legal to block them simply because there's so many of them?
The short answer is no.
Judge Andrew Napolitano is senior judicial analyst for Fox News.
The longer answer is, obviously, there will be an enormous consumption of time before people can be processed through the legal portals, and thus a temptation to bypass the legal portals and enter illegally. So once you put the tip of your shoe on American soil as an immigrant at a legal portal, you can claim asylum, and there's no limit to the number of asylum claims. If you sneak in not at a portal, you can be arrested within 200 miles and shipped back to the country from which you came. If you make it beyond 200 miles, they need an arrest warrant to arrest you, which is very difficult to obtain because they probably don't even have your name.
Wow,
so all of these factors will come into play when huge numbers arrive at the border at the same time.
And it would seem 200 miles past the border, depending on the terrain, depending on where you try to sneak in, would seem a long way to go to have an arrest warrant required. It doesn't seem like a lot of people would get that far.
Oh, a lot of people have gotten that far because they are advised by lawyers who tell them, look, I'm not telling you to break the law, but I'm just telling you, if you go 200 miles, it's more difficult for the federal government to find you, and they will probably lose interest in looking for you.
So there's been some maneuvering, negotiations with Mexico, on how do we get around this many asylum cases at once? How do we handle this volume of people?
We won't have a volume like this from Canada because we have an agreement with Canada that they will make an application for asylum into the United States while still in Canada in an orderly fashion. It's the Canadian problem to deal with the mobs. If it's a mob, I don't mean mobs in a bad sense. I mean large numbers of people. We do not have such an agreement with Mexico, nor could we possibly craft one before this caravan arrives. I believe the president would like to craft one eventually with Mexico, which would then put the burden of caring for this large number of people on the Mexican government. You see, once they make a claim for asylum, then one of two things happens. Either they are set free, which is what happened in the Obama years, and half came back for their hearings and half just disappeared into the general population, or they can be detained, which is what the Trump administration is doing. That detention will last for up to 10 months before the actual hearing will be held. Now, during that time, food, shelter, clothing, medicine, entertainment, it's very expensive for the government to do that. The Trump administration, in order to deter this, began separating families, children from adults. Every court has said that's unlawful. So the detention is lawful. The separation to breaking up families is unlawful. So the government has a huge, enormous expense and logistics problem on its hand. This is the essence of the president's complaint. Why do I have to take everybody who comes? Well, because that's what the 1986 statute, which on January 20th, 2017, you swore to uphold and enforce, among other statutes, that's what it says.
About 2,000 National Guard troops are at the southern border already in a supporting role for Border Patrol agents. The Department of Homeland Security requested hundreds more U.S. troops active duty this time. Fox's Jennifer Griffin covers the Pentagon.
We are not talking about infantry or combat troops being sent to the border. That would be illegal. Remember, we have this law on the books. It's called posse comitatus, and you're not allowed to use the standing U.S. military on U.S. soil for law enforcement or any sort of they can't be used as troops on U.S. soil. So what the Pentagon is doing to sort of thread the legality of this is they're going to send 800 active duty troops who are mostly engineers who specialize in building bases, building camps, setting up tents, and those tents are going to be used by Customs and Border Patrol. It's going to be logistical support for the Border Patrol. These camps that they're building are not for migrants who might come across the border. They are for the border personnel who are trying to, again, deal with the onslaught of potential refugees or migrants who are coming to the border.
Could they also end up being part of, you know, setting up tents or camps for the migrants? Because the best case scenario would be if nobody tries to come over illegally, let's say everyone tries to go for legal points of entry, you've got thousands of people who are going to be lining up to get in.
I'm told that these U.S. active duty personnel, these troops, will not be setting up camps for migrants. I don't know if that is illegal, if they are legally barred from doing so, but I'm told that is not their assignment. They will be down there basically to free up the Border Patrol so that they can focus on their duties. But remember, these U.S. military troops will be able to defend themselves. They'll have the right to have perhaps a sidearm, but they cannot be armed by law. And so they are not going to be used as any sort of, don't picture them standing at the border with, you know, as in a guarding capacity. And as you mentioned, I am told they are not going to be building camps for migrants.
It seems on its face as if it might get a little confusing down there, because you've got the Border Patrol agents, then you've got National Guardsmen, now you have active duty troops in the mix. They all know exactly what they're supposed to do, or are there going to be gray areas?
Well, remember, this is a request from DHS. They will be overseeing this operation. These troops will be lent to DHS. DHS eventually, I'm told, will pay for it. And there will be a command and control center, and they will be dealt with like with any military operation. You will have a chain of command. And so I don't believe this is going to be a willy-nilly situation down there, but I do think they have a very limited mission. And what is raising eyebrows is that the timing of sending these troops down there is coming just 1 week before the midterm elections. The deadline that the Pentagon was given was October 30th. That is a very quick turnaround time, and it comes just 1 week before the midterm elections. So that is raising some eyebrows, I think, amongst skeptics who say that this is simply for public relations purposes for the president to be able to say that he's sending active duty troops to the border. But what they will actually be doing is pretty benign in terms of setting up tents for the Customs and Border Patrol. And remember, this is not the first time that troops have been sent down to the border. President Obama sent about 1,200 National Guard troops down to the border over a period of a few years, and that built on what President Bush had done. He sent 6,000 down to the border at the height of the Iraq War. So presidents prior to this president have sent troops to the border, National Guard troops, but again, they've never been armed per se, and they are not involved in any sort sort of arrests of illegal immigrants or law enforcement capacity.
I'm sure the president would argue that what's driving the timing as well is the timing of the caravan and that he's just trying to respond to it. What is the mood at the Pentagon? You're there almost every day. Is there any kind of a shift in mood that you can feel based on what's happening at the border?
I would say that there's a sense that this is a mission that they can carry out, but it's not necessarily something that is at the top of their agenda. They have, you know, several wars that are requiring troops to be deployed to Iraq, to Syria, to Afghanistan, to Africa, out to the Pacific. And so this is a probably, I think, seen as more of a nuisance than a high priority because, again, these troops are not going to be stopping migrants from coming across the border. That is a misunderstanding of any sort of role that they would play down there.
So even if, let's say, a violent situation arises or there's a mad rush of thousands of people toward the border, that doesn't change the dynamic in terms of what's legal.
If you had something like that, and we'd have to check with the military lawyers, but it is possible that the governors themselves could call up the National Guard and that they could operate along the border. But right now, it would be a misunderstanding of the situation to think that these 800 active duty troops could be used in that capacity down at the border. They won't. They can't be, and they won't be.
Fox's Jennifer Griffin at the Pentagon. Thanks, as always, for your time.
Thank you.
This is Chris Wallace with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Joe Donnelly's seat in Indiana is one Democrats may have to hold to have any hope of winning control of the Senate. The Republican in the race is the businessman and former state rep Mike Braun. President Trump won big in Indiana in 2016, and Senator Donnelly's talking up his ability to work with him.
I've voted with President Trump 62% of the time. But at the same time, when I think that there's a policy that doesn't make sense, I'll tell him and I'll vote the other way.
Mike Braun says
Joe Donnelly will only vote with the president if Chuck Schumer lets him. And on no important legislation has he been with the president.
The race is looking like a close one.
The polls have consistently showed the two within the margin of error. Donnelly's generally had a slight lead, but I'm not sure that's meaningful.
Chris Sikich has covered both candidates. He's a reporter for the Indianapolis Star.
The fundraising is tight. They both raised about $3 million in the third quarter. Braun kicked in another $2.4 million in loans, but Donnelly had such a large head start that he had a larger cash balance to spend leading into the final weeks.
Let's talk about the incumbent first. Joe Donnelly's in the last year of his first term in the Senate. What's the sense of how he's done for your state?
Donnelly's really trying to push the message that he's a moderate voter who has worked with Republicans to try to get things done, passing 45 measures into law. The Republicans have tried to paint the picture. Is it that he's a guy who can't get bills finished on his own, who can't introduce and pass legislation? They frequently refer to him as the least effective senator. I think the reality is that he's a moderate Democrat in a red-leaning state, and he's trying his best to reach moderate Republican voters while keeping his base happy. And it's a really thin line for a Democrat to walk here in Indiana.
That's a tough needle to thread for a guy in a red state, a state that supported President Trump pretty strongly. Senator Donnelly's voted with the president's positions more often than a lot of other Democrats. He's also one of the few anti-abortion Democrats in Congress. He did, though, vote against Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court confirmation. Do voters there care, do you think?
Yeah, I think that the Republican base is really motivated to vote against Donnelly now, but I think he had enough cover with crossover voters that I'm not sure that's going to end up being a deciding factor when everything is said and done. He did vote for Neil Gorsuch, and I think he was going to vote for Kavanaugh, but when the allegations of sexual assault came up, I'm not sure that Donnelly could have voted against Kavanaugh and kept his base happy, and I'm not sure that he could have voted for Kavanaugh and still reached a lot of moderate voters who were concerned about those allegations.
Let's talk about the challenger, Mike Braun. He's an Indiana guy, born and raised, former state rep. He quit there to focus on this Senate campaign. He's a businessman. What's his business, by the way?
He sells auto parts, basically, in Jasper.
And you said he's loaned himself quite a bit of money, so I guess his business has been successful enough to do that.
Yeah. He's a millionaire here in Indiana. He's been very successful. He was kind of a political unknown until running for the state legislature 5 years ago. He kind of kept his head down in the state legislature, voted with the party more often than not. He was an unknown when he decided to jump into the Senate race, and he knocked off two Republican congressmen. The two congressmen really went at each other, and Braun emerged as the outside voice that voters went with. Those two guys had a lot of funding, and Braun financed his own primary. Then when the general election came, I think everybody kind of thought he was going to finance his own general election bid, so he had to start from behind on political fundraising. Well, Donnelly was out there on the campaign trail. I think Braun was on the phone and trying to set up a fundraising apparatus that he ultimately was successful with, but I think that it helped Donnelly get ahead in the summer, both in airing advertisements and in campaigning. And I think you've seen Braun narrow the lead a little bit here in the last few weeks.
These guys been keeping it pretty local, or is it like a lot of other Senate races, kind of about the president?
It's definitely about the president, but it's different because you've got one guy saying I'm going to vote with the president all of the time, and another guy saying that I voted with the president 62% of the time. Right. So the president is coming here on Saturday to speak to the FFA, and smart money is that he's going to come one more time to campaign for Braun. Donnelly's got in a trickier situation because he name drops Republicans. He never name drops Democrats. So it's unlikely anybody's going to come in here to campaign with him in the following 2 weeks because it's probably not going to help him that much. He brought in Joe Biden a couple of weeks ago, but it was up in near Gary, Indiana, which is heavily Democrat steel town outside of Chicago. But it's really unlikely you'd see him bring some kind of a liberal senator or politician into Indianapolis because it might scare away some of the crossover voters in the suburbs.
Yeah, I guess Indiana is one of those states where you're better off going for independents and trying to get the people in the middle rather than try to fire up the people far on the left just because there aren't as many of them, right?
Yeah, the Democratic path to victory is just super narrow. There's small amounts of Democrats in Indianapolis and then outside Chicago. And after that, you're trying to reach crossover voters. So a lot of times our Democrats sound a lot like Republicans.
The tariffs have been a bigger story in Indiana than maybe some other states because you've got steel and you've got farmers. The tariffs have been, you know, good for the former and bad for the latter. Has that been an issue in the campaign?
That has been an issue. Braun actually recently has backed off his support of tariffs. I think he seems to think it's going to hurt farmers in the spring, so he'd like to see the tariffs with China ended sometime next year. Donnelly has opposed tariffs. It's kind of a mixed bag here in Indiana. They seem to be hurting maybe manufacturing and hurting farmers, but certainly helping the steel towns up along Lake Michigan.
Healthcare is a big issue if you just look at the polls. Any difference in their policies there?
Yeah, Braun wants to repeal and replace Obamacare. He talks a lot about his own company's health insurance, which has a $5,000 deductible, a health savings account, and covers pre-existing conditions as a path he would like to see towards a replacement of the Affordable Care Act. Donnelly, of course, likes to say that his vote saved health care, and he really hammers that home with pre-existing conditions and Affordable Care.
You've got a Libertarian in the race, too. Her name's Lucy Benton. What's her deal? Can she pull some votes maybe away from either one?
Yeah, I would guess she'll pull votes away from both, but probably not enough in a way to affect the race for either one of them. She has a lot of standard Libertarian positions where she wants the government to stay out of fiscal and social issues.
Anything else interesting happening in your state this midterm election season? Any good House races to talk about?
Indiana is so Republican that they're likely to keep the supermajorities in our own state house. I don't sense any of the congressmen or women are facing serious challenges. We have seven Republicans and two Democrats, and there's really no way that I see that changing after this election.
Chris Sikich is a reporter for the Indianapolis Star newspaper. Chris, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Download and subscribe to original podcast from Fox News Radio.
It's time to get caught up on what's happened and what's next. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary. Chris Wallace.
What's on your mind? As of Sunday, it'll be just 9 days before the midterm elections, and there are a couple of things we know and a lot of stuff we don't know. The huge blue wave that a lot of people were predicting, that Democrats were going to sweep to majorities in the House and the Senate, that seems to be gone. In fact, it looks more and more like Republicans will maintain and perhaps even increase their majority in the Senate. In the House side, it's much more up for grabs because you're not talking about statewide races. You're talking about individual districts. And the president may be able to bring out his base of supporters, but that may not help in a lot of these individual suburban districts, educated, white women who have troubles with President Trump. And also we've seen in all of the special elections a surprising Democratic turnout of women, of more educated people, of minorities, of young people. So I think the House side of it is still very much up for grabs. On Sunday, we're going to have interviews with the heads of the Republican and Democratic House campaign committees trying to gain control for their party in the House, and we'll be on top of all of that this Fox News Sunday.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.